HPPodCraft.com.
Greetings, guests. It's the Comments Show for August.
Yeah! We're exclusively on Patreon.
And we're talking exclusively about Thuli, the month of Robert E. Howard. And really, this is just a test balloon because we're thinking of doing a whole year of Howard, actually.
What?
Yeah, I was thinking about doing a whole year of it in 2020 Thew. That's terrible. Let's get into these comments. It's Queen of the Black Coast, part one, and we've got a comment from Michelle Elbert, which reads, I love how Conan says he enjoys the sting of strong wine on his palate. I was hoping Chad was about to launch into a bit where he riffs on Conan doing a wine tasting, talking about how he detects a bouquet of dusty wind as my enemies are driven before me, and notes of leather and blackberries. Yeah, I mean, I wish I'd done that too. That's some pretty solid comedy. But I think that's the kind of thing that would confuse Schwarzenegger were he playing the role. He'd be, he keeps saying that I'm detecting these notes, but I don't see any notes. Nobody's writing me any notes. What are we doing this for? I'm not Conan the detective. I'm Barbarian. Whoa, what happened in the end? He turned into a French guy. I am not Conan the detective.
That's pretty good.
What are we doing?
Your Schwarzenegger's improving, I gotta say.
Nobody writing me notes.
Blake Coleman writes, I'm a few weeks late to the party. You guys are talking about the relationship between the lands of Shem and the Semitic people, or children of Shem. What I've pasted below is from Conan Adventures in an Age Undreamed Of, RPG core book from Modiphius Press. Mm. They try to stick much closer to the original Robert E. Howard material than any other prior game or comic, and I think their cultural comparisons are more in line with Howard's intent than the list on Wikipedia. It says here, the Hyborian Age may seem familiar to modern readers because it's based in part on real-world historical eras and cultures. As a writer, Robert E. Howard wanted to invoke the feeling of history, yet did not want to be confined to it. As an avid reader of history, Howard was familiar with both popular and obscure theories of continental drift, reoccurring cultural patterns, lost worlds, and the notion that much of the historical record had been irretrievably lost. Thus, he created the Hyborian Age, guided by history but not enslaved to it, using ancient era and medieval cultures as models for the countries and peoples of the Hyborian world, tying the world thematically to our own, but allowing for new and original interpretations of these elements. His use of names was a type of shorthand, invoking the familiar, yet presenting them in a new context, suggesting a world buried under layer upon layer of cultural, environmental, and geological change. These are some of the ones. Argos was modeled on merchant-ruled Italy. Sumeria was Gaelic Ireland and Scotland.
Definitely have gotten that, yeah.
Yeah. Hyperborea was medieval Russia, particularly Novgorod.
Interesting.
That's strange. Yeah, I didn't get that. Pictish Wilderness, a combination of Scotland and Native America, North America, and Shem. Shem says, it says here in the book, Shem, the West is the Iron Age Levant, Canaan, and Assyria, and the East is Arabian. So it was supposed to be Arabian. Yeah.
Well, I think all of which is to say that maybe these names are meant to evoke familiarity, but they actually are just weird combinations of history. So maybe we shouldn't be reading into them as being this A to B comparison or with some of the racist stuff. Yeah, I think that's probably true.
I would like to think that when I thought I detected some racism, there wasn't actually racism in that particular thing. That would be great.
I'd always love that to be true. Nathan Adam writes, Chad's description of doing the mashed potato naked with no musical accompaniment made me laugh out loud. Well, I hope so, because the day you imagine that and don't laugh, we're really in trouble. Between this manimal and Chris's seductive description of bee mating habits in the drone episode, you two could do a relationship advice show based on the lessons learned from weird fiction. I guess, I don't know, Chris, how would you work the fact that you can hear an audible pop when a bee orgasms into a relationship advice show? How does that anecdote inform anybody?
I guess it's just you have to take that and apply it to your own life. So when you have an orgasm, make sure your penis pops off. I don't know.
Whoa, that went in a dark direction. I thought it'd be more slogan-y, like bring some pop to your relationship. You're like, no, I'm going straight for broken dicks.
I'm working on it.
Fair enough.
Esteban Barbero writes, man, I love Conan stories. The descriptions are amazing, and I agree that everything about them is pornographic and intense. Emotions, violence, environment, you feel that you're part of the action.
Yeah. Oh, I jump right in there. Every time I finish one of those stories, I rip the whole book in half, which is costly. He's that good. Introvert writes, boatswain. Yes, that's the formal spelling. But guys, seriously? Say it with me, folks, and then he spelled it out for us. Bosun. Bosun. So I guess we were saying it wrong. Introvert says we should pronounce it Bosoon. So thanks, Introvert. We'll say it that way from now on, and we'll let people know that you're the one that taught us that. Bosoon.
Thanks, okay. Ben. Bosoon.
Pete Williams writes, my favorite Emily Dickinson poem is I Chase a Panther, Heavy Thewed. I told you. She loves that word. Queen of the Black Coast, Part 2, Clara Meath writes, I was drawing a gnoll for a D&D commission while listening to this episode. Thanks for all the serendipitous hyena talk, gentlemen. Serendipitous hyena talk. How's that for a phrase? Also, great episode and great reader. I love it when you guys do Conan. Thank you very much.
Oh, thanks. Shoggoth Lord writes, no, Chris. Hyenas' clitorises don't just look like peni. They work like them.
I think I was the one who said that they look like peni, so I'm glad you're the one getting yelled at.
That's fine.
There are actually a lot of exclamation points in this post, which is about hyena genitals. I'm going to point that out. A lot of them.
Lady hyenas urinate out of them, get sexual gratification from them. The things get erect when they're aroused. They even mount and penetrate males to show dominance. For this reason, in the days of exploration, the Catholic Church thought hyenas were the only exclusively homosexual species of animal.
That suggests that at some point the Vatican said, hey, priests, important business. Go out to your local woods. See what animals are banging each other. Get back to us on how they do it. We want to see. We want to make sure that's all hetero out there.
No, they exclusively homosexual species, meaning that some species, you know, species like to play the field. They're a little open about their sexuality. But hyenas were exclusively homosexual.
I was raised Protestant, so I didn't understand that nuance.
Shuggoth Lord goes on to say, also, lady hyenas have a high mortality rate giving birth because the first time round, their pseudophallus gets ripped open.
Ooh, yikes.
Anyway, if you want more hyena talk and maybe some delightful surreal, sardonic fantasy, I highly recommend the webcomic by Ursula Vernon called Digger. She managed to work that last hyena factoid into the plot in a way that wasn't weird and off-putting, which is a Herculean task in its own right.
I just like the end of that comment where it says, anyway, if you want more hyena talk, you know, it's just a funny way to end the conversation. Old Doc Fulton writes, oh, hyenas will get me commenting on something for sure. It's a great intro to a comment. Back in vet school, during a course on animal behavior, one of our professors told us that it was much better to get caught by a lion than hyenas, because lions kill you before they eat you.
Oh, God.
Yikes. Also, hyenas are one of the only animals that can become infected with rabies and carry it without dying. Jeez. Aww. One last thing. Although their laugh is the most recognizable sound they make, to call each other up, they make more of a rising whoop sound. Heard it in Africa and didn't realize what it was until much later, much to my chagrin. Are they eating him alive right now?
Oh, no. Oh, twist.
Was a twist. I didn't see that coming. Robert DSA writes, great episode, except I've been getting the weirdest ads after Googling hyena clitoris.
Yeah.
Screenshot those. I need to see them.
Mark Saunders writes, happy birthday to me. Happy birthday, Mark.
Happy birthday.
I listened to both episodes on this story on my birthday. I work in tourism, and due to the current pandemic, I have had few visitors, and seeing this was released on my birthday and I was working, I decided to listen to both episodes to boost my spirits, and you guys succeeded in doing that. Wow. Yay! Awesome. I thank you for that, and I hope you guys will take this as an example of how you have made a difference in the lives of others. You helped me make it through 8 hours of boredom before I could go out with friends, even though, through listening to the podcast, I felt that I was with friends already. Thank you.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, man. Thank you so much.
I'm glad that we could take you on a little tour of the Black Coast, since you're the one that's usually doing the tourist
stuff. All right, because, yeah, he's the tourist, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's how I made that connection. Well, happy birthday, man. I'm glad that we could be there with you. Megan Marshall writes, I woke up still thinking about the Snake Watch Nights comment because it made me laugh my ass off, and also because when I talk to people about the show Baywatch Nights, they look at me like I need to be admitted, thinking that I made it up. Thank you for keeping that show's spirit alive. Yeah, I bet that would be confusing if you knew Baywatch and you didn't know the other thing, but
I think we need to do a bonus content on Baywatch Nights. I just realized that. Why haven't we done that?
Yeah, well, because we need to do that. Well, first, let's look through the episode synopsis and see if we can find one.
Yes.
That just sounds like it would be relevant to our interests.
Yes, of course.
But Megan, sure, I would recommend with your friends, try Snake Watch Nights on them and see if they might find that more credible. Do a little A-B testing.
Ben Bunn writes, great show as usual, guys. I was struck by the opening reading, specifically his hair bristling at what he saw. Conan is so awesome that his hair gets all pissed off and aggro. I want more stories about Conan's hair battling necromancer mustaches, evil unibrows, and possibly getting it on with some actual supple panther fur.
Oh, yeah. My friend Mike Hughes, who's awesome for a number of reasons, but one reason is that his hair, he says, he tells me that he's gone to the same barber for 20 years because his hair is so like fibrous that it will cut the hands of a normal barber. He's got one guy only that knows how to cut it safely. And when he tells me this, he says it totally seriously. And it's not, yeah. If I have told people, I go, ask Mike about his hair. And he will tell them that as well. It's never delivered as anything funny. It's just a fact of his life. And it makes me so happy. Anyway, he's read for the show before, Mike.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I said that he has the strongest hair.
He also has strong teeth.
He has strong teeth, too. That's right.
As well.
Victor Badger writes, loved Josh's reading. It really made Howard's prose sing. I can recall trying some LibriVox recordings of Conan's stories, and they were brutal. The reader was, from the sound of his voice, 200 years old and bored to death by all of Conan's high adventure. Ah, that's no good. You got to be into it.
Yeah.
Also, Chad was bang on the money with Conan's appeal. We've all had a moment where we've wanted to cleave an annoying boss or unruly customer in twain, and it's significantly more beneficial to just read about Conan doing it than to bring an Atlantean sword to work. Yeah, please don't do that. Can't wait for Solomon Kane to bring vengeance and righteous fury next week. It's so funny. There's this documentary on Netflix that just came out about this guy that drove a bulldozer all over his town.
Huh?
Have you heard about that? I vaguely remember it happening about 10 years ago, where this was a case of somebody who just had it with his local government, and he totally decked out this bulldozer into an unstoppable machine and went around and wrecked all of these buildings. He ended up committing suicide in this thing, but it was very slow moving act of domestic terrorism.
Jeez.
That made in world news, Reagan had died, I think, the day after or something, so it kind of disappeared from the front page. But I watched it in a really interesting way, which is I go, oh, this looks interesting, turned it on. The beginning, this guy's detailing his grievances toward the city. I fell asleep. I woke up again in the third act when he was bulldozing everything, and I was like, yeah!
Oh, no.
And then I fell asleep again. So to me, it was just a story about a guy who was wronged, who made a kick-ass bulldozer and got justified revenge. And then I told Heather to watch it with me, and I pitched it that way. And then we were watching it, and she was like, I think this guy's crazy. She was really worried that I was on his side.
It sounds like falling down with a bulldozer.
It's a little like that, yeah.
Thomas Rawlings writes, so regarding old ones, to quote, this was the temple of the old ones, she said. Look, you can see the channels for the blood along the sides of the altar, and the rains of 10,000 years have not washed the dark stains from them. The walls have fallen away, but this stone block defies time and the elements. But who were these old ones? Demanded Conan. Are these old ones, great old ones? Was Howard referencing the mythos?
What do you think?
Could be. Yes, definitely, possibly. I don't have any more to add than that.
We're coming down on it with a strong maybe. On to Skulls and the Stars. Wolf Mungus writes, to say that Kane fought with his arms, feet, and hands, I imagine more than just a few punches and a chokehold. I imagine a full-on pro wrestling match as if the strap was on the line.
Yes.
Kane's jumping off tree branches like it's the third rope to drop elbows on this ghost. Yeah, I think so, man.
Yeah.
There's some Superfly suplex action. Folding chair got in there.
Superfly snooker.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Mean Gene interviewed Solomon Kane afterwards.
Shana Carter writes, I wonder why Robert E. Howard went with skulls in the stars instead of a skull among the stars, a phrase which appears earlier in the story. Perhaps Ezra's shrieking about skulls, plural, is meant to imply that he's being pursued not only by Gideon's ravenous specter, but also by ghosts of all the others who died on the moor in his place. Mm. Or maybe someone gave Howard this title and he altered an already written story to fit it. Either way, interesting protagonist, scary monster, satisfying denouement.
Yeah, you were wondering the same thing when we read it.
I was wondering the same thing, and I think that's a good guess. I'm going to go with that, because that makes sense to me. That's why he saw not only the moon, but he saw the skull of the moon, because that was the one skull in the sky, and then the skull of Gideon, and then maybe also the victims of the people that died in his place. So yeah, that's really cool.
Devin Trim writes, hey Chad, would you say that getting water dumped on you by your roommates in that door bucket prank had anything to do with your indifference to braving that flooding bathroom? I remember you telling that story at some point, too. Your total indifference when you walk past your roommate soaking wet always stuck with me. Very respectable move, sir. Passing thought, but I would pay extra for an occasional Chris and Chad Storytime episode where you told personal stories and shared life advice. I'm sure I'm not the only one. Well, you know, somebody pointed out to me that fighting water has somehow become a theme over time for me. Which is pretty badass. I do think that incident probably helped inform my water fighting training, very Karate Kid like. I didn't know at the time that I was learning, but I was learning.
You were learning. Stacey Schumacher writes, fun story. Did you see the film with James Purfoy? That was my first exposure to Solomon Kane. I wonder if Howard's stories continue to use wolf and other candid comparisons for Kane as compared to the panther feline comparisons for Conan. It makes sense to me as I picture canids as lankier, wiry, and more inclined towards a tenacious hunting power, which matches Kane's aesthetic. Hmm. This is the first Kane story I've read, though, so I could totally be wrong, and the others are full of comparisons to leopards, etc. Yeah, I don't know. I have seen that movie.
Oh, you did?
I started watching it, yep. And then I got bored with it, then I just never went back to it.
I shut it off after like 15 minutes. I don't know why. I was just like, bleh. It was because it was on streaming. It was on HBO or something like that.
Yeah.
So it wasn't something I made an effort to see. Therefore, I did not make an effort to finish it.
She goes on to say, also, when I listened to the show, I realized I'm conditioned to think that abstract hate could only be defeated by an abstract emotion like love or compassion, which is very much not Kane's aesthetic, kind of a polar opposites kind of thing. But thinking on it further, courage as an ideal could work because in the right place or for the right reasons, courage could contain and be motivated by love, compassion, and generosity. Although I think Kane's courage was more motivated by arrogance and never leaving a fight and not wanting to lose to a ghost.
Yeah, I do think that's a cooler idea that some kind of compassion would have been the better abstract emotion. But I think you're right. His courage comes from not believing. I'm getting beaten? No way. That's where his courage comes from. It's kind of like me. I don't know how to lose. I tell people that all the time. I know that people lose, but I don't know how to lose. Blake Coleman writes, I really enjoyed this episode, guys. Your review and analysis of the story were both insightful and entertaining as usual, but I especially appreciated your examination of Kane's character. I've heard other podcasts that simply write him off as a one-dimensional fundamental zealot or 16th century Conan. How many podcasts are talking about this? But neither one of those interpretations gives credit to the nuance Howard infused into his character. So I was so glad that you both appreciated and examined the complexities and contradictions that apparently come with being an unconsciously thrill-seeking Puritan who enjoys... who drops elbows on yammering ghosts and leads the most sympathetic and reasonable mob in history. Yeah, seems black and white, but it's fairly nuanced.
Moving on to the Shadow Kingdom, the Cole story. Make America Great Old Ones Again writes, I imagine that as long as there has been civilizations, there have been people with fantasies of exposing their leaders as evil others.
Gosh.
It is, I suppose, easier to accept that your king isn't even human rather than just as human as you, but with very different values.
Yeah, I think that's right. I was really surprised that reptile conspiracy theory stuff came out on the national stage a week after releasing that episode.
Did it?
Yes, because the president endorsed that doctor.
Oh, no.
You didn't see any of that stuff?
No.
The doctor he endorsed that believes in the demon sex and that kind of stuff also is a big believer in the reptilian conspiracy theory. It was just in the news. Like, we released that episode, and on Tuesday the next week, I opened up, you know, the news aggregator, and it was like, what you need to know about the reptilian conspiracy? I thought, man, that episode landed. No, it's because of politics.
Sorry.
Hey, I gotta say, on Trump's part, that was either a move to show that he's not a lizard person by saying that he supports that doctor, or it was a very skilled way to cover up being a lizard person.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Misdirection.
We're still going to have to see.
Esteban Barbero writes, this story reminded me of the 90s Conan cartoon where the main villains were the snake men. They even used them as a device to avoid showing blood. Whenever a snake man was in contact with a weapon made of a very special metal, they were cast off to another dimension instead of dying. Mm. Man, I loved that campy Conan.
What the? I don't. Did you ever watch that?
Yeah, I
was it a Saturday morning?
It was in that early 90s, I think, where, I mean, we were like in college and stuff.
So well, that's, I have a big blind spot for the 90s, so I...
Cartoons, yeah.
I don't know what was on. I didn't see, I didn't watch any TV at all.
I think I went back and saw some on YouTube, and yeah, they're pretty sanitized, obviously. They're
sure.
It's Saturday morning, so it's not very Conan-y, but I vaguely remember those snake guys.
I just figured I'd know about something like that, but reading that comment, I went, what? There was a Conan cartoon? Yeah. I didn't know. Wolf Mungus writes, Steve Brule, the Spear Slayers. Is he a slayer of spears? So that was a good point.
Dr. Steve Brule.
You know what? I didn't think my question about Howard naming him Brule, maybe because he was delicious. I don't feel like that was treated with much respect in the episode. I just want to say, that's my comment. Eldritch Scary writes, he doesn't know the Music Man. He doesn't know Dr. Steve Brule. He doesn't know Hitch. I didn't realize Pfeiffer was unfrozen caveman gas face lawyer.
Why gas face?
Well, gas face I understand because I was saying that's what my boss used to call me at work. But
Oh, right, yes.
I don't understand the reference of the rest of that.
Unfrozen caveman lawyer?
Why am I a lawyer?
Peter Larson writes, Howard is unshaky. Howard is shaky ground unless you're willing to buy into his worldview for the length of the story. Like most Dungeons & Dragons adventurers, Conan is essentially a sociopath. You sort of need to engage with him on his terms.
You know, because I got the good experience of starting role-playing games by playing Call of Cthulhu and Beyond the Supernatural and Vampire and a lot of things that you introduced me to, I didn't really play that sociopathic D&D kind of styled game, but I'm playing a game right now and it's totally that. I mean, I'm not complaining. Hopefully my buddies don't listen to this and get mad at me, but there was this thing we were doing. There was a big group of teenagers who were like cultists to this dragon and they killed them all.
Whoa.
And I was like, guys, these kids are like 16 years old. I don't know if I feel good about that. Like, whatever. We want to, you know, we just want to get to whatever we were trying to do. And I go, all right, well, for my character then, she's an elf. She hates goblins. And you know what? To her, everybody's a goblin. Humans are goblins. These guys are goblins. She's basically just a huge racist, you know? And they were like, cool.
Oh, whoa.
I'm like, okay, that's the game we're playing.
Okay, so that's the way you're always going to play it. Okay.
It's a certain kind of fun. Philip Cowan writes, I think you were right, Peter. That, for me, is difficult. I just can't engage. Not to dive too deep into the psychology of this, but I'm not a big sports fan. I could never bring myself to care if one super fit guy could beat another for no reason. It all just seems so narcissistic on the part of the participants and pointless on the part of the spectators. But that is clearly not the subjective experience of sports participants or spectators. It matters to them a very great deal. I readily concede to having something missing. Howard leaves me cold as there is no greater good at stake. Clearly, this is unnecessary for some, and they can enjoy the slaying with glee. I am sure everyone leaves that pleasure at the end of the reading. I don't think Howard fans are psychopaths.
Whoa, okay.
Oh, good. Well, no, actually, Philip had written, and he just, you know, he was like, please, I don't like this stuff. He left another comment. Yeah. So it just doesn't, it doesn't connect for him, and I get it. I understand the point of view. I would say, you know what's funny is sometimes these things connect, and then they don't for years, and then... it will again. It all depends on what's going on in your life and your mood and what you need out of fiction. So, yeah, totally okay not to like something.
Yeah, but for me personally, Conan is cathartic and it channels. I'm not a violent person at all. I've never been in a fight, you know, or anything like that. It's never, you know, it's just, I'm not that kind of guy. But there's something primal that Conan touches upon that gets excised some way. I don't know exactly how, but it does for me.
It's
and obviously
fuse.
That's my experience.
That's the primal
thing. It's my fuse.
Conan runs his hands up those thews and you go, ooh.
Let's move on to the comment show. Similar with sea monsters. Shoggoth Lord writes, oh, on Lord of the Flies, I think the best summation of its moral was an anecdote I saw online. During a college course, someone's professor proclaimed the book showed the core failings of human nature and became rather indignant when they calmly pointed out that it only shows the failings of upper-class white teenage British boys that had been handed everything their whole lives and taught to view themselves as the center of the universe. Tell that same tale with people that have been marginalized in the past, and it's very unlikely to play out the same way.
Handbill writes, hey guys, we live in Salisbury, where Golding taught at the local posh school, Bishop's Wordsworth. He wrote it after a lifetime of observing schoolboys, which is interesting when one compares Lord of the Flies to the behavior of certain politicians, for example. Well, I really enjoyed the article. I don't know if we actually linked out to it in the show notes.
We did.
Okay, yeah, I read it, and I thought it was about a real life group of boys who helped each other out in that scenario. And I enjoyed it, but I also enjoyed the book Lord of the Flies, which articulates a lot about probably that very specific group, but maybe also about basic human struggles. I personally don't think we can draw conclusions in any broad way about the natural state of man from these things. You know, there's an argument to be made that things could work out or that they would get dicey. I actually honestly base that on theater. If you've been in a lot of shows and a lot of casts, sometimes you all come together and sometimes it's miserable. And it's a little random how those things come together. It's sort of amazing when you get in with a group and you go, wow, everything's great. We all love each other. But just as often it can be not a great group. So it depends on who you're on the island with, I suppose.
Sure. We're on this island to Earth, for crying out loud. So there are places like this is being played out as we exist. It's been played out for hundreds of thousands of years that humans have been successful. I'm using that in quotes for a long time because they work together. Somehow they manage to figure out that the people that are more successful are the people that have societies and cultures where they can trust one another to get things done. And the ones that you can't do that tend to fall apart.
I'm sorry, I missed all of that because when you said we're on this island Earth, my whole mind was blown. I don't know if I'll ever hear again. No, I agree with you. I totally, yeah. You're
right. Yeah. So, of course, there's places and groups of people that are terrible, and there are places and groups of people that are great. And hopefully you end up in one of those great places.
Well, let's determine. Let's just pick a random commenter. Let's say this next one you're going to read from and decide whether he's terrible or great. Go ahead.
Okay, let's see. Random one. Just I'm picking. And Jeff C. Carter? What? Oh, wow. Why is he always forcing himself on our show?
I don't know. Well, let's hear the comment. Let's see. Terrible or great?
Regarding, don't tell people about what you plan to do. This was a piece of writing advice I picked up early on. That was quite a revelation during those days when my friends and I would breathlessly tell each other all of our ideas and never follow through on any of them. It could even be seen as a living example of that other writing commandment, show, don't tell. Hmm. Not only do I use this trick to keep the inspiration under pressure until the project is done, but I have intentionally broken with it as a brain hack. If you're trying to finish one story and your muse is violently derailing you with something shiny and new, feel free to tell your friends about the new idea. It's guaranteed to suck the air out of it.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Nothing's worse when you have a great idea and then you tell one other person. And then you just don't want to do it anymore. Nah, it wasn't such a great idea. Yeah. All right, now into Clash of the Titans, our bonus episode from last month. Rave Wolf writes, I suppose that in the internet era, we do owe the release the Kraken meme to this movie. Though I'll bet a lot of kids using it online today don't know the origin of it. Yeah, I think they think it's Liam Neeson, something he said.
Oh, man. Jason Thompson writes, regarding CGI versus stop motion, I agree with you that stop motion looks more immersive than bad CGI. But I also grew up with watching these movies, so it could be my generational bias. In my humble opinion, what really looks the best is Henson-style animatronics, like the greatest animatronic movie ever, Little Shop of Horrors, where they filmed that giant plant puppet and sped up the film when the operators and the mechanisms couldn't move fast enough to make it look convincing. I've never even realized how they'd done it until 20 years later, and it just looks great.
It really does, yeah.
It does. It's amazing. It is a visual marvel to this day.
Blake Coleman writes, just FYI, because everyone gets this wrong, Immaculate Conception is different than Virgin Birth. Immaculate Conception refers specifically to the idea of Mary being already forgiven for her sins, including original sin, at the moment of her conception. She was still conceived in the traditional human manner by mortal parents. Although the term is often used to refer to a virgin birth, whether Christ's or others, that usage is erroneous. Sorry to be that guy, but you guys always seem to appreciate learning new things, so I thought I'd mention it. Well, yeah, I mean, I was curious about that. Did you know that?
No. So when Mary was conceived in her mother's womb, she was free of sin. So she had no original sin like all humans do. She was immaculate.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. That's crazy.
No, I had no idea it was nuanced like that. I was too busy looking at the church doctrines on the sexuality of hyenas to get into this.
Steve writes, it's a bit weird that the owl is called Bubo, which is Latin for owl, and not Glox, which is Greek. Good point. Darth Sudnem writes, probably because they were aiming for something that sounded cute and a little bit like 3PO or R2, and Glox sounds like a brand of industrial lubricant.
And L2D2 was probably too on the nose.
Yeah.
JP Briskinomicon writes, such a fun movie for a third grade nerd to see when it first came out and for a middle-aged nerd to stream now with a wife who's never watched it before. Harry Hamlin was in this? Is that Laurence Olivier? Oh my God, is that Maggie Smith? Yeah, I imagine. It's got to be a weird view.
Darth Sydenham writes, sorry to be that guy. Oh, I got another one. But Chris, Cerebus is a controversial long-running comic about an aardvark. Oh, yeah, I did say that, didn't I? And the three-headed dog of Hades is Cerberus. In Latin, it's Kerberos in Greek.
Busted. You said it wrong.
Yeah, it's Cerberus. I was supposed to say Cerberus. I said Cerebus, which is, yes, the aardvark by Dave Sim, who I guess went off the rails. I don't know. Something happened with him.
I think that's a safe thing to say about anybody.
Well, I've gone off the rails. Let me
Everybody's gone off the rails.
Oh, man. But I appreciate being called out. Please do that because I'm trying to improve as a human being, and I sometimes need a little guidance.
It's just a pronunciation thing. But yeah, it's always good to get corrections. And by the way, we know how to say both, and I'm just kidding about that. But it's really, we were doing that on purpose, so I actually am really entertained that somebody got mad at us for doing what we were, for once we were doing, mispronouncing something intentionally.
Yes. Yeah, it was a bit. We were doing a bit.
Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for speaking up. For now, I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast Comment Show.
Exclusively on Patreon. HPPodcast.com.